Hello and welcome to episode 7 of Chasing the Dragonfather, Crick's podcast that is ready for the brave new world of post-fleet Crick's.
Okay, I'm class.
Hello.
So right. there's a lot we can talk about at the moment now because we've just had Lock and Load. There's a lot of announcements have come out with regard to the future of the game, and so I figured we'd just kind of go through the Lock and Load announcements and then the announcements that came with Steamroller, including ADR, and just talk about how they relate to the game in general and how they relate back to Crick's. The big Crick's news out of Lock and Load is our first faction theme force book, which is going to be the Black Fleet. And we saw a lot from the Black Fleet, so, you know, go forth and watch the keynote for details. But Black Fleet's going to include Satixus, Black Ogryn, Blood Gorgers, human pirates from the Shard Islands, Scar 3 on a ghost boat, and at least one new named Blood Gorger solo. Firstly, on a pure Crick's level, what do you think of all that?
To be really fair, I didn't watch the keynote at all.
Oh, no.
I think it's going to be cool. I like Blood Gorgers.
One of the really notable things about the announcement for Black Fleet, and when you put it next to what they said about Trenchers, what they said about Manowar, is that these Theme Force books are going to be stacked. There's going to be a lot of units in them. There are, like, the number of options you will have within Black Fleet for building lists seems really big. You got a whole bunch of different units that you can use. Nearly 10 units by my count, if we count all the new ones. Because there's a new Black Ogryn unit, there's the Shard Pirates, there's a Satixus character unit, and on top of the three existing Satixus options, on top of Blood Gorgers, it's possible we get more Blood Gorgers in there as well. So, I think that gives a really strong picture of the way they want themes to look in a year's time. Is that, like, lots of people who don't like themes say the problem is, like with Ghost Fleet, there's basically two ways to build Ghost Fleet. Your 60 points of Revenants that are basically the same, and plus or minus a Wraith Engine. Though I think at this point the Wraith Engine is pretty standard. And you're saying, well, this kills list creativity because if you decide to run a Ghost Fleet list, it's basically built for you, bar plugging in the caster. So if you're the kind of person who likes to tech different lists, Ghost Fleet shuts down that ability to tech. But when you see what they planned to put in Black Fleet, there's so many different units you could take that you could clearly build that list in a dozen ways. You know, you've got shooting options with your human spray pirates and Satixus gunslingers and the Black Ogryn belchers or whatever they were called. But you've got like a number
boarding
of...
Boarding party.
Hmm?
The boarding party.
No, the other one, the new ones have like these big belcher cannon things.
I don't care about the new ones. I've got two units of the old ones. I'm ready to get.
Yeah. And so you've got a bunch of units with guns, but you've also got the option to go with melee infantry with Satixus Raiders and Blood Witches and Blood Gorgers. You can mix it all up. The amount of options within that theme seems huge for how you want to build it. And I am delighted to see it because it means that in a future that is all about theme forces, what you bring in your theme force is going to be very different. Because I think it's safe to assume that down the line, more Revenants will come out to expand Ghost Fleet. More Banes will come out to expand Dark Host. And the same across all the factions, I assume, as much as possible. Because they also said that they're going to push out the release of a number of theme forces so that by the end of the year, every unit will have a theme force that it lives in. Or they have said that theme forces are the way they want you to build lists. They've kind of stopped pretending that they don't want everything to be a theme force. But they've said, as a consequence of us doing that, we have to make sure that every model fits in a theme force as soon as possible. So they said they're going to push them out as quickly as they can.
Basically, theme forces are just evolving to mini sub-factions.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of best way to describe it.
Actually, a lot like mercenaries are right now. Or like they used to be in Mark II with the Cephalix thing and then the Dwarf thing and the Pirates thing. But this is going to happen for all the factions.
I think that's probably the best way to describe it, yeah. And so, how do you guys both feel about that? Do you think that's a positive direction?
I think it's the game getting kind of, you got to bear in mind as well, is that War Machine as a game is, what, 10 years old now? 10 years old? 13 years old? Something like that. And there's a lot of kind of complex interaction between a lot of the units that that people play, and there's like the inherent synergy between thematic models. And I think kind of the incentive to play theme forces maybe is their way of kind of trying to manage that bloat and make it a little bit easier to balance the game. And that if you're playing a theme force, you've got the 3 points of however many points it is, 15, 20 points. And that makes, like, gives you an incentive to play that theme force. And it also means that there's less focus and there's less need to balance the inherent synergy between other models, because the fact that you're playing points down, if you don't play a theme force, means those other synergies are perhaps less attractive, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that is the general intention of it, for sure. Like, at this point, you're disincentivized for playing out a theme. Or let's put it this way, in a world where all of your models have a theme force they live in. Because right now, like, at this exact moment in time, one of the reasons to go out of theme in Crix would be, I need Styxus Raiders for this matchup. But once there's a Styxus theme, then you're pushed very strongly towards playing Black Fleet to get your Styxus. So right now, not counting CID stuff, which we'll discuss later, if you want to play Mercs or you want to play units that don't have a home, then you're pushed out of theme. Once they get all the themes out and all your faction models have a theme they live in, if they accidentally produce a Styxus unit that is batshit broken because when Dara Wrath is around, for instance, they don't need to worry about it if he's not in the Styxus theme or, you know, any other synergies like that. And as the game gets bigger and bigger and bigger, inevitably that kind of thing is going to sneak through even with CID, because nobody can test everything, not even the entire community at it at once. So I think it's probably a good long-term strategy. I think the problem has been the short-term. They're rolling it out, I think it's turned quite a few people off the game. Not necessarily people who are rage quitting, but like, I know that a lot of the people that I used to play with in Ireland before, I've sort of stepped away from the game in the last couple of years, or since the transition in particular, and because of the rapid pace of change that we've seen in terms of CID cycles, in terms of themes being very powerful, they just feel like, well, I haven't looked at the game in a year, and I'm not sure, the game feels a bit alien to me, you know, and they're finding it hard to get back in. But I think once they finish this push of all the stuff they want to bring out, and they make it to the game's new status quo, hopefully by the end of the year, I think it'll be much easier to get those people back in. Because those people that I'm talking about are people who still love the game. They just don't feel like they have the time and energy to get back up to speed, because things are changing too. As they try to get back in, things were changing.
Much of that is perception. I mean, in reality, we've had some Crix changes. We've had Battle Engine changes. And I'm forgetting something.
Scorn as well had a big...
Yeah, I know, but that was in January already. I mean, that was part of the errata. But apart from that, I mean, we just had some Crix changes and Battle Engine changes from existing stuff.
And I think they were all positive, though. Obviously, I, on record from the start of this podcast, as being a Crix player who fucking loves Battle Engines. So obviously, I'm happy with everything that's changed.
It feels like there's changed a lot, but I don't think it's that much more than would have changed, with the old style of things. It's just that while you're doing CID, you think like, so this week we have, I don't know, we're testing trenchers. Next week we're testing Northkin, and there's this and there's that, but all that stuff hasn't released yet. So you think there's a lot of rapid pace and change, but actually on the tables there isn't. I mean, last weekend there was Lock and Load. Well, the only thing that were used, or the only things that were used from all the CID, was the new Battle Engines.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say Grimkin, but actually not really Grimkin.
Grimkin were played. They were available to play in the Masters. So I know Tom Guan was playing Grimkin in the Masters.
Okay, then maybe Grimkin.
And the Whaley was playing Dark Host.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Darko, sure. But that's just a theme force. It's not too big. You know, and they were actually still playing old Steamroller, even. So you have the feeling like, oh, all the shit is really changing really fast, but it's the CID just gives you an idea that shit is changing really fast, but it's not necessarily true.
Yeah, I feel like people have to get used to the idea that CID, there's always going to be something in CID, and when the cycle finishes, it's going to be a month or more before it comes out. And I think we have to get used to having like two modes a little bit. Like if you want to participate in CID, because you don't have to, if you don't care, you just play the game as it's released, no problem. But if you're participating in CID, I think you need to be able to switch gears a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know it did hit a point towards, in the last few weeks before Dark Host hit War Room, I was like, no, screw it, I'm just going to play Dark Host anyway. And, you know, having to ask my opponents, are they cool with it? Didn't have any problems, like everyone was quite happy. But I found one of the things that centered that was when the next big event is. Like, so for all the local players in Ireland, the next big event is the Irish Gauntlet in August. So we all knew that Dark Host would be out by August. So everyone was happy to play against it because it was going to be there, the thing we care about. And I'm sure that for the rest of the summer, it's going to be a question of, are those CID changes going to hit before WTC? Because if they're not, I bet that most WTC players won't play a lot of games with those CID rules.
I agree.
Northkin might be out. But,
I don't think so.
But probably won't be locked in time for the list submission.
Yeah, and the models won't be there.
And the models will... Oh, that's actually a very fair point as well, because half the Northkin stuff are unreleased models that we might not see for 6 months or a year, depending on how much they've got to handle on those kind of early... on the speed of releases issues. Like WTC troll players aren't going to care much about Northkin right now, but I'm sure they'll jump all over it come the end of September. Which has kind of always been what it's like to be a competitive War Machine player. If you know that there's a model coming out that you're very excited by, but it's June and it's not coming out till October and you've got WTC to prepare for, then you just put it out of your head. You don't test with it. You don't worry about it or think about it for 3 months. And I think we just have to put CID in the same box that we put models we don't have or rules we don't have models for and CID all belong in that same box. The other bits from Lock and Load, then, that are worth kind of talking about in a Crix level are, well, Scar 3, who is going to be on a motherfucking boat.
I'm pretty excited for Scar 3. Like,
just I'm on a horse. I'm on a boat. Sorry.
What do we know about her so far? We know that her feat allows her to take 1 point of damage, and for each point of damage, cast a spell on her card. Each spell may be cast once. So it's basically take 5 damage, have Veil 2 speed.
Yeah,
we know she has Guided Fire. We know she has Dash, which is a spell I never thought we'd see in Crix.
I know. So good.
Speed 10 Soul Hunters.
Yeah, but they're not going to be in what's it, Black Fleet or whatever. So you'll have to play Infernal Machines, and then it's not that bad.
Yeah, Infernal Machines is sweet.
Of course it is. It's, and I'm not going to be that bad, because it's not the worst team we have.
I think so.
What, that Infernal Machines is our worst theme?
No, I think Ghost Fleet is the worst theme for Scar.
Oh, for Scar,
I think she's equally valid in Infernal Machines and Dark Coast, just because you can stack deceleration with a Wraith Engine. So if you're taking like Soul Hunter, they're suddenly running across the table at Armour 18, which is a hell of a lot more relevant than Armour 14.
Yeah, that's a pretty huge difference.
And they're speed 10.
Like speed 10, no free strikes. Yeah.
Go fuck yourself.
Also, I think Guided Fire is an interesting spell in Crix because, well, you've got Defilers, for one thing. And you've also got the Colossals, which put out shitloads of shots. So she'll probably run a Kraken or a Sepulchre pretty well as well. Obviously, we haven't seen all of the things on her card, and it hasn't even hit CID yet, so all massively subject to change. But I don't think we've become quite excited about the fact that she's on a gigantic motherfucking ghost ship, though. Like, that model is going to be absurd.
Yeah, and you have to transport it.
There is that.
And you decide to only use half the ship, because else you can never fit it in a transport case.
Yeah. Someone did say to me, like, a horrible suggestion that makes me scared, which was that she might be a structure.
No.
not once.
I am 90% convinced that all structures are going to be garbage just because they can't move. That's just bad in a game like War Machine that's pretty dynamic and fast moving. I just think that a thing that can't move, that is huge and easily targetable, is just rubbish. Unless the rules are patently absurdly broken, I think they're going to be terrible. And I really hope they're all terrible, because otherwise it means one of them's broken beyond belief somehow. But I sure as fuck do not want a Warcaster who can't move. That's the worst thing I could possibly think of, unless she has like 40 boxes and armor 25. And even then, I'm not sure you could get her through the game, you know?
Yeah, because you have things like Marauders.
Yeah.
if she keeps Backlash as a spell, it might not be that bad.
Just, you know, to scare them off, yeah.
It's like, oh, there's a Marauder. Yeah. Yeah. Come here, baby. I got a nice spell for you.
And summoning all of our listeners, if that gets put into CID that she's a structure, light the torches and march upon the castle. There was that. There was our 12 models of Christmas model, whose name escapes me, and I don't have in front of me. But
Agrimony.
Agrimony. Great name.
Yeah.
So she's, what, permanently incorporeal? Takes away tough.
Permanently incorporeal. Well, we don't know that she's permanently incorporeal. All we know is that they said she's got no attacks that make her lose incorporeal. So either she's got no attacks, or the only attacks she's got are spells, I'm guessing.
Oh, that's a fair point. Yeah.
She's a revenant as well.
Yep, so she'll play in Ghostleaf.
Yeah, get rid of that Dark Pistol Ray.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's all we know, I think.
Yeah, and that she takes away tough and does something else. But yeah. But we're going to get a cool solo that floats around all spooky and does spooky things. I'm down with that. The character art looks cool. I suppose that leads us round to the other big thing, though. We've got to put the CID caveat on it, that this might not be around for a very long time, but I think it makes for some really interesting discussion in Crix, and that is the possible inclusion of mercenaries in Theme Forces. The current wording of the rule is you can have one solo, one unit, one battle engine. I think that blows list building in all the Crix Theme Forces all the fuck the way open.
Huge.
Yeah.
A couple of things in particular. Scabrous gets to have his crow's cutthroats.
Russian Brine.
You get to have your Russian Brine.
Russian Brine and Scabrous is a riot. So, how far does Ninja Pig go? A long way.
And I think it makes for some interesting questions with the Degrad Ghost Fleet, because I'm suddenly tempted to drop my Wraith engine for the first time since the beginning of this podcast.
Yeah.
For, like, Ragman and the Devil Shadow, and, like, some other points, I guess. You know, maybe a bigger battle group or something. Because the Devil Shadow is another set of sweet guns that also does some recursion. Ragman covers the Dark Shadow thing, which is one of the really big reasons for the Wraith engine in Ghost Fleet. And then, you know, the third model doesn't matter too much. But it means that when that comes through, my Denegra 1 Ghost Fleet list is suddenly way less locked than it was, or it has been, for the last 6 months. Because there's a lot of incentive to put in some other stuff.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that, but Devil Shadow Mutineers were not in the Negra lists, even when the Negra was played out of team. Even before Ghost Fleet, nobody used the Devil Shadow Mutineers anymore. So I don't really think that is much of an issue.
Well, I went to Devil Shadow largely because of, like, thematic things. You know, they're semi-spooky pirates. They should just play there.
Oh, sure.
But Nis Hunters could go in just as easily.
Or in Midwinter, for example.
Yep. I mean, those one-off solos to fix certain matchups will be popping in all over the place. And I think adding units, Merc units in particular, creates a really interesting interaction with the free points. Because I think the way people have been approaching building Theme Forces thus far is, I take my 60 points of dudes to get me my three free things, no matter what, before anything else happens. I think the Mercs provide a really strong incentive to accept one less free solo. Like, dropping the Pistol Wraith out of Ghost Fleet and taking Nis Hunters instead of your Ghost Pirates, for example. Seems like a good trade. It does, to a certain extent, render the Nis Hunters 5 points more expensive. But they've got a really strong niche ability in that list. And the more you go, like, the deeper you dig into, well, I could take a unit and a battle engine, but then I'm down to one free solo, but I've gained this big chunk of flexibility. And I think, I know there's some people that are saying, maybe we should just chuck theme forces then. Why not go back to this crazy thing where you could just take all the models available to your faction? But I like the interplay of less restricted themes, but where there's a cost benefit for how many restrictions you're applying to yourself. That feels more fluid and engaging than just taking theme forces away entirely to me. Because I can go pure Ghost Fleet, get my three free solos, or I can go, well, I want my Revenants, and I'll take my free Rengrave, my free Hellslinger, because of course I do. But then I want to play with these other points to do maybe some Crow's Cutthroats, maybe some Nis Hunters, maybe some Devil Shadow, whatever way the points work out in that remaining space. There's pluses and minuses, literally, in terms of the points you're bringing with what you're doing with that last 30, 40 points. And that's cool. I like that a lot. And I think that when we've got themes with more options, like Black Fleet, that's going to become super interesting. And there'll be so much room to do the kind of thing that we all love to do, which is build some janky shit. Ryan, what do you think about the mercs in Theme Forces? Is there anything that really jumped out at you?
On face value, I'm not too happy about having that or getting access to Ragman again. But on the plus side, it does mean they've got to give up something free, so I guess there are trade-offs. It doesn't really matter. The Stormwall or Hurricane of Stormclad still kills the pirate, whether he's got dark shrouds or not, so it's not hugely relevant for me. But what it does, it does open some interesting doors for perhaps Infernal Machines, I think, the most out of our three theme forces, because that theme force encourages you to take, like, Metrals for the ambush and the possibility of free surgeons, but the list actually lacks living bodies to fuel them, whereas actually the possibility of maybe adding some press gangers or something that have got their own living recursion, they already AD alongside your mechanothralls anyway. So, interesting synergy to get different units in that bring different tools, and
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Even more more curious choices, like before theme forces started becoming popular, I was experimenting with Lich 2 with Crow's Cutthroats after Lich got arrested. Because you kind of want to bring Machine Race with Lich 2 anyway. Machine Race and Crows are just like jelly and ice cream. They're brilliant together. So that would give you the chance to play your Crows in maybe Dark Coast alongside the Banes. Because Bane Warriors love some Machine Race, bringing them heavies to kill. And Crows can get in on the action with a little bit of pew-pew first. So, interesting.
I think it's interesting, but they should really look at it on a case-by-case basis. Mm. So, because in general, this change really hits them right in the design space. And it really...
Oh, my design space!
It really brings them, or it's really a step back from where they're going with all the team forces. Because what we identified as one of the biggest advantages for Privateer Press to work team forces is because it's easier to manage. And maybe also for new players, it's easier to get into. All of a sudden, they're just adding random items like mercenaries that could really unbalance some of the theme forces, or that could really, make a big problem for some theme forces.
So do you think each theme should have a list of mercenaries that would work with it?
Or some themes have mercs and others don't. For example, Ghost Fleet is running the meta as it is. It's not necessary to have mercs added to it. I think it will only speed up the eventual nerfing of Ghostly and will in the end be worse off.
They did say over Lock and Load as well that they're not going to nerf Ghostly in the near future.
Yeah, okay, but the near future, when is the near future?
Well, they said that they want to, that in the last year they've done some pretty rapid balance errata. And that they want to lay off that for a little while because people are afraid to buy into things that are good. We've created an uncertain environment that means people aren't buying models. So we want to make the environment more certain. We're going to lay off rapid balance erratas and see how the meta responds.
I mean, that's cute. That's nice. But is that a guarantee that Ghost Fleet will remain good? That's not sure.
Well, I suppose it means in the near future for whatever their value of like near future is.
Exactly.
Irene, I reckon we've got till the end of the year anyway.
Okay, that's great, but if I buy models, I want them to last more than 6 months.
This is true. But that exact concern is why they're saying they're taking the foot off the gas on the, like, hard balance erratas, is because they don't want you to feel like you can't buy models in case something gets, you know, nerfed. So I think...
I mean, circling back to the original point, it even though they're saying, like, hey, we're not going to nerf shit really quickly, it's still not necessary for... I mean, I'm just saying Ghostly because that's us. But, I mean, Ryan mentioned heavy metal. They also really don't need mercenaries. For example, the Winter Guard team with all the Warjacks, it really doesn't need Ragman or whatever else you can... I don't know, Ayana holds or something.
True, on the wider whole game level, I think there is a little bit of an element of the rich getting richer with the access to mercs, because Signar and Kador were already two factions that had really good themes and were having pretty good success, and Signar for sure is the biggest boogeyman right now, and they get a lot from this. Though, again, to give PB some credit, they have said that in the pipe is a revision of what mercs work for whom, if this change makes it through CID, which is the other thing. They've said that this merc change it won't just be one CID cycle, or it might not be just one CID cycle, that they're willing to give this, because it's such a big change, this could be 2 months of CID. Personally, I think that doing some version of it is worth it, because maybe the limited version that you suggested at the start, class, of you match theme forces to what mercs they can have in that direction, rather than have it be faction-wide. I really like the ability to open up what's in a theme force, so that we can do that thing where we build janky-ass lists and go, all right, you know, I got this sweet list idea that has this merc unit and this merc solo and this merc battle engine in it. And it's in a theme force, but I'm only getting the one free solo. Like, I've started... It's one thing that's changed about my list building, actually, in the last couple of weeks, is that I've started not assuming that three free solos is essential for every single theme force. I've started considering, because I've been building, like, Ghost Fleet with Kraken and stuff, maybe if I only go to two free solos, sure, I'm down a Pistol Wraith, but I've just built this list that is very different in character and execution to the Ghost Fleet list everyone is expecting. And Infernal Machines, because I really want to do the Seethers on Arlich Overseers thing, because you're putting the Seethers in, you end up with only two free solos in those builds as well. And maybe I'm not quite ready to go to just one free solo, but I'm seeing myself go in that direction and accept not going all in on the theme force benefits. A lot like initially when tier lists, you know, Mark II theme forces came out, that initially everyone went, well, it's tier 4 or nothing. And then after a while, people started ratcheting back and going, I don't know, I only need to go to tier 2 for this. Or, and so on and so on. Like, sometimes that's because the tiers were badly balanced and the good shit was right at the start. But for others, it was a real decision. Do I go to 2 or 3 or 3 or 4? Adding the mercs in creates something that feels like that to me. Of, I can go all the way deep into the free points, which dictates my list build more, though when it comes to Infernal Machines and Dark Host in particular, there are dozens of different ways you can get your 60 free, or your 60 points of Banes, or your 60 points of Thralls. Dozens. And they're all very good in different lists. Can you tell that I've been building lists like a motherfucker for the last month and a half?
Yeah, because you haven't had time to play.
There's so much interesting stuff in Crix right now. So maybe that's why I'm optimistic about the game. You know, on one of our group chats, you know, me and Pat were arguing to the people who'd let the game drop that the game's great and fantastic. And someone did make the fair point that, you know, he's playing Signar and is the champion of the world, and I'm playing Ghost Fleet, which is the scariest list in the world, so obviously we're happy. But nonetheless, I'm still super fucking optimistic about this game at the moment. And much more so after that lock and load announcement. Also, Ryan, did you say Dark Host was the broken thing that got let through?
Well, the Florida must have believed so. I don't know. I haven't tested it nearly enough to to know either way, but I know Brandon Andrews is already playing Scar 1, and so the fact that Dark Coast counts the Wraith Engine, he was already playing 2 with Scar 1. So the fact that Dark Coast already counts those Wraith Engines, he was already taking towards 3 points, means he's only actually got to take 10 points worth of Banes, really, to actually get his 2 free sailors and make that Theme Force worthwhile. So I can kind of see where they're coming from. I'm not sure if Trump's ghostly entirely yet, but time would tell.
I've been playing a lot of Coven Dark Host recently. Like, about 80% of my games in the last month have been with Coven Dark Host, and it's freaking great. And it's a superb pair for Ghostly.
Yeah.
So, like, that pair of Coven Dark Host and Denny Ghostly feels great. I suppose, actually, it's indicative of how good Dark Host is that I'm not 100% sold on the Coven one yet, because there's other ways to do it. And there's, you know, there's the Lich 2 list with double Warriors, double Riders, and no Wraith Engine and stuff like that. There's a lot of different ways to build Dark Host, and it's definitely good. What I don't think it has is the unfair game feeling of Ghost Fleet.
Yeah.
If you haven't made a plan for Dark Host and you run into it, you're not going to get steamrolled in the same way. You might get beat because it's good, and it's certainly a very strong list out of the gate, but it doesn't have that feeling of, if I don't have a plan, I'm just straight fucked.
Yeah.
You see a bunch of Banes across the table from you, you can go, okay, I can form a strategy at least. So maybe that's why it doesn't feel as broken, because it doesn't feel like a negative play experience under any circumstances.
Well, it depends. I mean, you say, I see a bunch of Banes across the table. That really depends. If you're Legion, then yes, you do see a lot of Banes across the table. If you're not Legion, then sorry. You don't see shit.
Yeah, because I'm stacking my Lich 2 Cloud Wall on top of my free clouds.
Exactly. Well, or if you play the Coven, then everything's got stealth, bitch.
I mean, the best thing about the Coven list is the stealth Wraith Engine. It's worth it for the look on your opponent's face when they go, all right, so what has stealth? And you go like, all right, these guys have Prowl, you know, they're in the cover there, and they've got Prowl, and they're in the forest over here, so they're stealthed. And this unit has Occultation on it, so it's stealthed. And they're like, all right, so I'm going to shoot the Wraith Engine. I'm like, oh, it's touching the Egregor. It is also stealth. Good luck killing an armor 20, 26 box battle engine that is incorporeal and stealth at the back of my army.
Yes, because why the fuck should it be in front?
Well, you know, you want to be a bit aggressive with it, just not stupid aggressive.
Because
It's got one of the higher threat ranges in the list, so.
Yeah, you might actually want to bring 2, just to be sure. Oh, wait. Hi, Brandon Andrews.
Yeah, well, the Scar 1 version, yeah, it sure is one considered. I really want to get some Peace Scar Dark Host off the ground as well, because That just seems really good. You just fill the table with high-quality models, and whichever of those high-quality models makes it to the opponent becomes super high-quality and fuck up your day. There's the version of the feat where you alpha really, really hard, and then there's the version of Scar where you're a bit out of threat range, so you just send everything in, they kill what you can, and then it's the version of Scar that I call the Dream Crusher. You're like, oh man, I did pretty well. I killed like 20 out of those 30 Banes. And then the remaining 10 Banes kill 4 heavies, you know? And I think that Scar Dark Host is basically the Dream Crusher Bane scenario. Very resilient to shooting already. Bane Riders, Bane Warriors, Wraith Engine. It's pretty resilient to shooting, so you don't kill as much as you think you should. And then whatever's left just ruins your day horrifically.
Yeah. It just should just be a way to heal Scar.
There's the objective.
Ooh, right.
It won't do it.
I thought that objective was meant for Crix anyway, but why not? What other objective would you need? Come on.
The Pathfinder one's pretty good.
Really? Come on. If you need Pathfinder, you're not Crixing the right way. Come on.
There are some casters that don't have Ghostwalk that you play.
Yeah.
Like
Scar 1.
Like Scar Wars?
An entirely ghostly army? Yes, yes.
Lich 2 doesn't mind a little bit of Pathfinder for his art mode, so they can hide behind forest.
Lich 2. But also, come on, that's Lich 2. He's like, I mean, he's still Lich 2, but he's really not the first line of casters.
Oh, no. Lich 2 Dark Host, man. It's good.
It's good, but there's better.
I don't know if there is. Like, it's right up there with Coven. Lich 2 and Coven are my top two. Scar 1 is hovering there too, so that's... Let's put it this way. That three-list tournament in August, there's a really strong chance that my three casters are going to be Denegra 1, Lich 2, and Scar 1.
Oh, what year is this?
Nothing's changed.
But yeah, I think it's interesting that we're still circling back to those casters, even after the hits they've all taken.
Aaron Whale, that's him, yeah.
I was, when I saw him playing Lich 2 Dark Coast on the stream, I was, I dropped everything to start watching that. He was, because he was playing in the Iron Gauntlet World event, and mine just was on the Saturday, Dark Coast dropped on the Friday, he was playing his fully painted Lich 2 Dark Coast in the Iron Gauntlet. I don't know whether he borrowed it or whether he packed it expecting it to drop or what, but he played Lich 2 Dark Coast into Axis. I thought Axis would be quite a solid drop into Bane just because of the feet and Razor Wall and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, well schooled him.
He went in from one side and came out on the other.
Yeah, basically. Just Bane for days.
I think he just got stopped by Pat because, you know, Pat. Also, big shout out to Dunford. What a fucking legend.
Yeah, finally, champion of the world. Like
Dunford to American Slayer.
Yeah. That game was really fascinating to watch, actually, because nothing happened in it. Almost nothing died. But it was an incredibly tense hour and a half. It reminded me of the old school Mark II matchup of Heavy 2 Lich, where it's going to come down to small positioning things.
Yeah.
And in the end, Pat managed to do the Heady 2 bit of push a bit too hard and get control of things. But the fact that while Whaley didn't do a lot in terms of killing models, the threat he was projecting from that list forced Pat to be incredibly careful.
I didn't watch it, so I have no idea.
It's worth a watch because it's a really careful game of War Machine on both parts. Alright, so before we wrap up, there's one final thing that I think we should have a brief chat about. And that is the advanced duty roster for Crix in this cycle. The question is, as ever, is it worth it taking a pair? Or we could just end the segment early and just go, nope, fucking, it's rubbish.
We're done, good night.
Yay! So our four ADR casters this time round are Agathia, Lich 3, Gorshade 1, and Mordred Ebra 2. So, do you think that there is a pairing in there that makes taking them worth it? I mean, you've got the 40 points of specialists in a Masters event, which is a lot of points.
That's a lot of points.
But, we're also in a Theme Forest world where switching the free points in and out is very challenging. And we have to deal with the fact that these four casters, none of them are setting the world on fire.
No.
I seriously wonder why the fuck they all keep putting the stupid Agathia in there.
They just really want someone to play her.
Apparently. I don't know. I mean, think
she's
Lich,
not even
Lich
that bad.
3 is... Yeah, that maybe so, but she's boring as well. Lich 3 is a great choice. I mean, he's a great caster. I don't know if you even can call him underrated. He's really, really a good caster. You have different builds at work. I think right now, popular build in Belgium is out of theme, but with all the character jacks and unit of Satixus and Ronga and Snapjaw.
Yep.
The thing is, Gorshade 1 does a little bit different things, but has a very similar build. So he also takes a lot of jacks. He plays very tanky. And he used a ninja pig and also, Ronga and Snapjaw. So they're actually very similar. I mean, one of them could be half of your pairing, but together they actually both do the same for a large part.
So is there either one of them that could really take advantage of the 40 points of specialist?
Gorshade 1 does, I guess.
With Gorshade 1, I really like the idea of being able to switch between, maybe in Dark Host, maybe in Infernal Machines, my inclination is towards Dark Host, that you have your battle group be something along the lines of Three Seeders, And you've got a 2-point solo in there somewhere as well. The reason for this will become clear in a moment. I like the idea of being able to switch between those three seethers and three seethers versus one seether and two desecrators in Dark Host as one module that you could switch in and out. In the sense that I always thought that Gorshade 1 does a pretty decent my battle group is a stealth gunline approach that because of Shadowmancer is a melee threat later on in the game is a good way to play him. But you also want to go in a more aggressive direction from time to time, which suggests multiple seethers. And countercharge plus stealth is a really good combination of rules.
Mm-hmm.
My inclination with Gorshade 1 would be to use the as much of the specialists as possible to have a very flexible battle group, because in theme it's very hard to move troops around without fucking up your free stuff, or even just finding the even numbers switching in and out is very difficult at the moment anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the biggest benefit you can get for your ADR casters is battle group switch around. So if you take that as one half of your pairing, maybe. The other thing I think you can do is, I think Agathia runs a pretty good ghost fleet.
Maybe.
Not a particularly interesting ghost fleet, but a pretty good one, because she has Parasite. She has the ability to stealth the entire army for a turn and delivering more ghost fleet.
Uh-huh.
And I think she's a caster who does well being able to switch a Kraken in and out.
Really?
Interesting.
What'd she do for the Kraken?
Mostly, I think that having a Kraken to switch in and out in ghost fleet is really good. And I think that Agathia might run Ghost Fleet better than the other people on ADR if we're going, just sticking to that list. Mostly because Parasite is the thing Ghost Fleet needs.
Okay.
And I like the ability to drop a Kraken in a Ghost Fleet list. Because that Ghost Fleet encourages you to bring brutal anti-infantry options on top of the specific tech for Ghost Fleet. And if you can drop in a Kraken, you create a whole new question for them that many anti-ghost fleet lists are not prepared to deal with. And that doesn't just, I suppose that doesn't just apply to her. I mean, you could maybe try and do the same thing with Lich 3.
Yeah.
Because he's got Calamity. He's got Mobility, which means you could play a battle group of four Stalkers for fast threat and have a Kraken waiting in the wings to jump in. Because a Mobility Kraken is pretty solid.
Sounds fun.
So there's that as well. Broadly speaking, though, I don't have any specific plan for it. I think that Infernal Machines probably, of the themes we have right now, Infernal Machines probably synergizes best with the 40 points of specialists.
Yeah.
Because it has more models in it, basically. And you can use things like, you can use Brute Thralls to create a Mechanthrall unit of a switch-outable value for Soul Hunters or whatever. You can kind of tailor the exact cost of that unit a little better between Brute Thralls and Scarlet Commanders. Because you want things that match up without messing up your free points. So you want to fill the list that is double Soul Hunters, but you want to be able to threaten something else. You can build an 18-point unit of Mechanthralls.
Yeah, which caster do you want to do that with, though? I mean, Infernal Machines is all fine and dandy, but it lacks Ghostwalk. I think it's almost unplayable without a Ghostwalk.
Well, you do have Agathia Ghostwalks.
Yeah, okay, but then you're back to Agathia, who is then also the least interesting caster, I think, on that list.
Least interesting doesn't necessarily mean least good, though.
Well,
sometimes being boring is the way to roll.
That's true. I mean, ask Scar.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, it's what I meant, though. She's the least good caster on that list. I think something could be said for Mortenebra, but I'm not sure how you would play her. Maybe in Dark Post.
I played around with some lists on War Room, and just in general, across all of the casters, all of the themes, and all of the approaches, taking advantage of 40 points of specialists is really awkward.
Yeah.
Super, super awkward. So at the moment, I'm probably not going to go that way. But one thing I think will really help is access to mercs, if that does come through in some form. Because then you've got a little bit of, well, I can only take one merc solo, but can I take an alternate in my specialists? Though that would also need to be clarified in the rule through CID, whether that's possible. But I could see a huge value in being able to switch between Gorman and Ragman in my specialists. Or Gorman, yeah. Ragman, have Gorman, Ragman, Auron available in specialists and like switcheroo to the matchup patches. That might convince me that it's worth playing a pair of Lich 3 and Agathia. If I've got this really fine-tuned ability to bring answers to things. Right now, I don't think it's there. But before we finish up, though, I want to give more than ever to her due. Do you think that there's something she can do?
No.
Oh, well. I tried.
Pat said no, so I'm inclined to agree with that. He's the boss, after all.
I mean, in our last cast, Tim Bankey did suggest that more than ever to Dark Host was quite good.
I assume it is so, but it's probably more because of what Dark Host does all by themselves than because of more than ever.
This is very true. Though he did make the very strong point that Banes love Spell Piercer.
Yeah.
But the Spell Piercer is incredible for Banes. But I personally, I can't get past how unmitigatedly garbage more than ever 2's feet is.
Yeah.
It's just so bad. And Crix is a faction that is full of amazing feats. If I wanted to play a faction that didn't have good feats, I'd go back to Troll.
Agathia wants a word with you about having a good feat and all that.
Yeah, her feat's pretty poor. Well, I mean, stealthing your army is an okay feat.
Sure.
It's not a great feat. It's a shitty coven feat. But it's an okay feat.
It really depends. I think maybe, yeah, maybe in Ghost Fleet there's some added value, but...
Yeah. Like, I think Agathia, yeah. Ghost Fleet is probably a decent list to have. I mean, there's other little things like Agathia Ghost Fleet can take a battle group with Desecrators and they get to Accumulator from her. So you've got like a battle group that has some pretty decent shooting and a bit of infantry control in a Ghost Fleet list. I think Agathia Ghost Fleet is solid. I mean, it's obviously no Denegra 1 Ghost Fleet. We know this and no one's going to argue it. So actually, let's stick on that Ghost Fleet thing for a second. Can Ghost Fleet take advantage of 40 points of specialists in a meaningful way?
Not really, no.
The biggest thing I think is bring a big battle group, give up on your shitty pistol wraith, take your free Hellslinger and your free Rengrave, and then have a battle group that hangs in around 40 points and be able to switch that around a lot for Agathia. To be able to go, and then boom, I have a Kraken now. Hooray. Or something like that might be worth it. But then again, I've tried lots of ADR stuff in the past where Colossal in, Colossal out was the choice, and it was never quite enough in my experience. No. It seems like it should be a big matchup changing thing, but it often isn't. Going forward and looking at potential future ADR lists, I think there's going to be something that comes along where switching the Kraken in and out is money, but it's not these four.
It's not.
No, I don't.
These four are very much the least inspiring casters in the faction. I think Denegra 2 is worse than several of the casters on this list, but all four Crix casters on this ADR list are boring.
No, Lich 3 is not boring. You should put him on the table, he's not boring. No, he's actually really good, and he's nice, and he has options, and there's a lot of game into Lich 3. So he's definitely the star of this lineup.
Gorshade 1 has one plan. Though it is worth noting about Gorshade 3 that his feat is basically Asphyxius 2's.
I like Gorshade 1's.
In the Ghost Fleet?
Seamless, yeah, that has no access to Banes.
Yeah, I like it a lot in that context. There's stuff there for Gorshade 1. I just don't know how to best take advantage of it. Oh, he's not a bad caster, he's just really boring.
I'm not sure if he's boring.
Well, what does he have on his spell list that makes him exciting?
I like Shadowmancer.
Well, that's a good spell, but it's not an interesting spell.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't really open up. Doesn't open things up. That's true.
But it does make your battle group very, very good.
Mm-hmm. That by itself is a good thing. I mean, I think Gorshade's battle group is probably the best battle group we have. That's something for Crix. I mean, he makes the Crabjacks good. He makes just Jacks in general good. Because let's be fair. If you look at what's the ideal combo now is Ghost Fleet with a minimum battle group and Dark Host with a minimum battle group.
Yep.
And Gorshade 1 kind of shakes that up by wanting to actually play Jax, which is interesting by itself.
This is very true. That leads us back to the question of, if you build a good battle group list with Gorshade 1 that has a couple of Seethers and a couple of Desecrators so you can go back and forth in shooting and not shooting, how do you build the rest of the list around that?
You want to play him into all the shooting matchups, maybe. I'm also not sure if you... Because, I mean, he can take a lot of shooting matchups because of the stealth. And if you play it in Dark Coast, he's got the clouds to hide behind.
That is one of the things I really love about Dark Coast, is the ability to put your two clouds together and just, like, my caster is safe there forever. Is a huge benefit. And allows a lot of very ballsy plays. I like a lot.
Gorshade is a caster that can actually be a lot frontline. He can be further up the board. He's kind of.
He likes to be because Lamentation is strong the further up you can put it.
And stealth.
I had a Ghost Fleet list a while back before I fully bought into Ghost Fleet as everybody knows it right now. Maybe it's worth playing Ghost Fleet just for the +1 to go first. And the first thing that I jumped into was Asphyxius 3 with a lot of stock.
Yeah, I remember.
And that might be something you can go back to. You know, you take 40 points of Revenants, thereabouts. You get your Rengrave, you get your Hellslinger, and they're pretty happy to be with a caster who has Calamity. So that's fine. But you can also do a big battle group of incredibly threatening Stalkers. Like, if you go first with mobility Stalkers, you can threaten everywhere. It's really, really, really game-warping when you do that. So, I suppose after all this discussion, the thing that I think, where I'm settling on what I would try to do if I was forced to play ADR, I'm still not convinced I ever want to, but I think I'd end up with Lich 3 and Gorshade 1. And Lich 3 in Ghost Fleet, and Gorshade 1 in Dark Host. And both of them leveraging bigger battle groups than we would traditionally. Do you think...
Maybe.
With the 40 points of flex, that could be a thing.
I think you can actually, with the 40 points of flex, turn Lich 3 into a regular Ghost Fleet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You could just go, all right, strip four Stalkers out, and it's... Four Stalkers, does that work? Yep, that's less than 40. Strip four or five Stalkers out. So yeah, but let's play 7 Stalkers, and we could just strip 5 of them out and add Ghost Powers back in. Mm-hmm. We'd have to work out the exact numbers, but that seems like a list that could switcheroo in a very worrying fashion for the opponents. Because they don't know if they're going to have to deal with the fastest Stalkers in the world or traditional Ghostly.
With still a lot of very fast Stalkers.
That still has a couple of very fast Stalkers.
Also, you can play the mirror with that.
Yeah,
this three can really play the mirror because of Hellfire. It's just fucking all over the place.
Yeah, because that's true. He has Hellfire, yeah.
I mean, 2 and Vocifron, but that could be enough. And there's not a lot of ways for Ghostly to really stop that. You can really just run up a chicken and kill some shit. First shoot the line of sight blocking models with your own rifles and with Rengrave and whatever the shooting you have. Then run up a chicken and Hellfire.
Yeah.
You can easily disable a unit a turn.
That sounds pretty good. Have we talked ourselves into playing ADR casters in our next Masters event?
Of course. Then
maybe.
That's a better response than I expected, let's be honest. We've started to have a think about it. That's not bad.
Yeah. We're really, really pioneers, man. What was it you said again? We're wizards and prophets and all that jazz.
We are wizards and prophets. That's it.
We're going to play ADR.
We're going to play ADR and we're going to take the world by storm. Not a guarantee.
Anyone coughing's got nothing on that.